Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Alami podcast, Change Your Company. My guest today is Oleksandra Matvichuk, and it's a very special episode because Oleksandra is not only Nobel Prize winner for peace for 2022, but also an activist who has been driving a very noble cause, taking care of and helping the people in Ukraine to deal with all the war and all the casualties and the crime that have been happening, and helping to document all this and help the people who are the victims, and push for the whole international community to create a space or to create a movement to stop this. To stop all these crimes and to stop all this war and all these innocent people that are paying the price for this. Oleksandra, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for invitation.
Oleksandra, usually I interview a lot of leaders and experts in leadership in the traditional sense, like in a corporate environment, for example. We talk about how to lead a team, how to create more commitment from the people. In your case, actually, you are an example of leader who doesn't have a title or a special authority, but you still created a huge movement around you, and you were able to make a big impact on your environment. And this was recognized by Nobel Prize community. Committee, and who gave you this title for a 20 or prize for 2022. So tell us a little bit about what gave you the drive to go after that mission and to be so committed toward it.
Probably I will share with you my personal story.
Yeah.
When I started in school, I got acquainted with Ukrainian dissidents. Dissident movement, it was movement of intellectuals during the Soviet Union. People, writers, poets, philosophers, engineers, different kinds of technical or humanitarian elite, they are fighting very bravely against the whole totalitarian Soviet machine. And they were persecuted. Some of them were jailed, some of them were subjected to forcible psychological treatment. A lot of people were killed, but they didn't stop. So when I was a child and got acquainted with people of such kind of character, I was very inspiring by their example, because I saw people who say what they think and do what they say. I saw example of people who have no other instruments how to change reality, but just their own words and their own position. And this example inspired me so much that I decided myself to study law and to fight for freedom and for justice.
So you had these role models around you when you were little, and you were clear about that you want to go and study law because of this.
It was like my impression that I have to continue the struggle, because I was born in Soviet Union, but I grew up and spent my more like childhood in the independent Ukraine, because Ukraine in 19th restored our sovereignty. And I remember my shock when I was in school and started literature, and suddenly I understood that Ukrainian poet and Ukrainian writers were killed by Soviet regime when I was a child. So we spoke about evil not from Middle Ages, but evil which is presented in your life, which is so close to you. Mm-hmm. And I remember that such understanding drive me to do more, to fight for freedom.
Mm-hmm. So, when you went to study law, was it something that you studied it because of the mission, or because you were just passionate about law and being a lawyer, maybe?
I think that law is a very safe method how to deal with conflicts and the problems which can arise between people. It's much better than brutal force. It's much better than political decisions, because law provides predictability. Law can set the clear rules for everybody without any discriminations. So law is much profitable and safer for people as a method how to regulate relationship.
Yeah. And at what point in your life you basically focused all your work and what you do around this, which is this mission?
Because I was born not in Switzerland, but in Ukraine.
Yeah.
We got a lot of challenges from the beginning. I would remind you that 9 years ago, we lived during the authoritarian order. And only 9 years ago, when authoritarian regime collapsed, after the revolution of dignity, we got a chance to build a democratic country. And that time, 9 years ago, I was a human rights defender who tried to help people who was beaten during the mass demonstration against the government decision to stop Euro integration process. And that was a time when millions of people stood up their voice against corrupt and authoritarian previous government. And they faced with different kinds of persecutions. So I created, together with my team, a civil initiative, Euromaidan SOS, and we brought up several thousands of people to provide legal and other assistance to persecuted protesters. And every day, hundreds and hundreds of people were beaten, arrested, tortured, accused in fabricated criminal or administrative charges, passed through our care.
But is there like a specific incident that it had a major impact on your life where you felt like, that's it, I'm gonna go? Was there like an accident or incident or something you saw or you experienced that made you decide to dedicate your life for this?
So we have to return further, because I said previously that I decided to study law to fight for freedom, but I'm from a poor family, and I told to myself that I will try to combine both tasks. I will do a successful commercial career as a lawyer, and parallel, I will do something good for society. And this was my plan, which failed, because once again, I was born not in Switzerland, but in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And probably the last drop for me was because according to this plan, I tried to combine, and I created the All-Ukrainian Youth Organization. I'm from a youth movement. And parallel, I worked in bank field. So the last drop for me when our president of Association of Ukrainian Bank made a press conference, and he criticized Ukrainian government. He told that the policy is disaster for the state. And next day, the tax police arrived to Association of Ukrainian Banks, and just a punishment for such critiques. They made a false case against association and demanded to pay several millions of fine. And this was my last drop. I told to myself that it was a good plan to combine, but I have to decide, because in such a country, it's not suitable and comfortable to just to do business. You can't do business without a compromise in under authoritarian rulers. And I decided to concentrate on human rights defense. And that was a time when I stopped my commercial career and fully devoted my life to human rights issues.
And so what's your vision? Like, if you think about when your mission is, like, let's say, more complete, or at least, like, developed to a high extent, what would be the vision, like, that you're after?
I know, because I passed so many trainings that we have to have a clear goals, and we have to describe our vision of the future. But to be honest, when I was a child and my parents asked me whom you want to become in your life, I never mentioned any profession. I always answered, I want to be a kind person. I want to be a good person. And my parents were very disappointed because it sounds very abstract, and they think that in reality, I can't survive with such a way of thinking. But I really believe that we have to find, like, a deal in life which we can do with passion. Mm. And devoted our life to this passion.
Mm. I mean, I remember when I had once a great coach and teacher, and when I told him I want to do this work, which is developing people and creating more inspiring workplace and organizations, he listened to me, and then he said, Are you sure this is what you want to do? And I said, yes. And he said, are you willing to die for it? And I was like, what are you talking about? Why should I die? And then I realized at one point that he was trying to see, like, how much I'm committed and how much I really want to go until the end and how much this is meaningful for me. And that's something actually what I see in your example as someone who is going, like, till the end in this. And actually what you shared now about being kind, I mean, obviously you're a very kind person, and I saw you live speaking to large audience, and you speak to large audiences all the time. You combine the kindness also with the resilience and with the strength and with the confidence, and I think that's in a way what leadership requires. Like, so how would you describe yourself in that sense? Like, you are kind, but you are very kind of, how to say it, not compromising when it comes to the principles and to the rights of the people. How would you describe yourself in this, and how do you manage also this polarity in a way, or this two different sides?
But first, I want to return to your story, because I think that this person asked you about your values. Because values is something which defines our behavior, not when life is going easy and smoothly, but when we are going through the hard times. So when during the hard times, we stick our decisions and patterns of behavior to values, this is our real values. And that's why probably he asked such a question. Are you going to die for this? Returning to myself, I think that there is no surprise, because people who want to be kind, it doesn't mean that they have to be passive. I'm very determined to the goal. I have no, like, boundaries in my head, and I try to reach this goal in different ways, to be creative. And my main lessons learned as a lawyer was when I understood that when you find yourself in a situation when the law doesn't work and you can't rely on the legal mechanisms, and I was several times in my life in such a situation during the huge historical changes in my country, like a revolution of dignity or this large-scale war, which Russia started against Ukraine, or other episodes, I understood that even in such situation, you can still always rely on people. And my main lessons learned is that ordinary people can do extraordinary things, and they can change the history quicker than the UN intervention. Returning to my examples with Euromaidan SOS initiative, because once again, we was a group of people who provide legal assistance to persecuted protesters, but the whole state machine was against us. Paramilitary group Tituski cooperated with prosecutors. Prosecutors cooperated with courts. The former president, former government, and majority of parliament were against us. They want to liquidate peaceful movement, even physically. And in this regard, it was so easy to tell, but what can I do when the law doesn't work, when all state institutions, which was designed to protect law, using their power to persecute and kill people. But because our volunteers, our lawyers, fought very honestly for each person, for each procedure's measures, suddenly we start to work not just on legal level, but on symbolical level, a level where ideas and senses are merged. And the main idea which we bring to the protest was that in our life, we have no guarantees. You can be beaten, you can be arrested, you can be even killed during this protest, but there are people who will fight for you, who will never left you alone, who will do their best to help you, and who will help your family. And this understanding of this idea provide millions of protesters around the country to continue the struggle and to overcome the fear.
Amazing. This resilience that you have, is this something that you developed, or you think you always had? Like, again, because if you said you wanted to be kind when you were little, and your parents were worried about that, because we know we are in a world that, you know, we need to stand up for ourselves, and also in your case, for example, you are standing up for other people as well, and this requires strength and resilience. Is this something that you think that it was in you always, or is something that you developed as you went on this journey?
I think that I have to reflect about this question more precisely. But what I can answer for current moment is that we have a lot of example of ethical-driven leadership in Ukrainian history and in the world history. And we all know people who can be named like kind, but they achieve success and made a huge strategic changes in reality. Yeah. For example, Václav Gavel, Miroslav Marinovich, Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, and a lot of other people who inspires me and a huge amount of others people in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Talking about these leaders, one thing come to my mind, the question I want to ask you is, on the spectrum of introvert versus extrovert, where do you see yourself?
I know the answer because I made the psychological test, and I'm in the middle. I'm ambivert, okay, which means that I can be extrovert or introvert. Okay. And the problem is that I can't regulate it. And in some audiences, in some circumstances, I behave like extrovert, but in others, I behave like introvert. Okay. So it's a very tricky issue.
Yeah, but in a way, you manage it somehow, or no, it depends, just like on the situation.
I think that it depends on situation, because there are a lot of things which we can't choose in our life. For example, we never choose country which we are born, We can't choose time which we are living, but we can choose to be active and to take responsibility or to be indifferent. This is our choice. So I think that a lot of depends on your personal will.
Yeah. How do you see, if you compare yourself to where you were at the beginning of the journey and today, do you think you've grown because of the mission? I mean, there are people who say that you need to have a like purpose in life. And when you have a purpose, it automatically, in a way, when you go after it, it will force you to grow, because otherwise you will not be able to achieve it. While others, they say, well, you need to have the purpose and you need to always think about how can I grow, how can I become better. But I think the person who said this, have you read this book by Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning? Sure. Yeah. Sure. So I think Viktor Frankl says that, you know, once you have a purpose, the purpose will force you to grow and expand. So where do you see yourself compared when you started the journey? Do you think you've grown? And if so, was it like a conscious effort or was it just by going after that mission?
I think that there is no universal recipe. Mm. And I don't found any bad when some people focus on additional development, some skills. It's also okay. And yes, goal is important. The sense of living is important. And I saw the problem for current moment in the world, not just in that fact that in authoritarian countries, the space of freedom is shrinking to the size of the prison cell. But the problem is that in well-developed countries, a lot of people start to openly put into doubt the universal principle of Declaration of Human Rights, because they inherited the system of democracy, rule of law, and human rights from their parents. They have never fought for this system. They forget what freedom means. They became consumers of democracy, not just bearers of these values. And that's why they start to see a freedom like a possibility to make a choice between cheeses in supermarket. So this is a problem for current moment. And that is why it's so important to have a sense in a life, because if you lose your freedom, which is very fragile, next day you will have no cheese. So returning to your question, let me share the personal story. When the war started in 2014, because once again, I know that for many people in the world, Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022, but the truth is that Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2014. It was immediately after Revolution of Dignity, because we succeed in this revolution, authoritarian regime collapsed, and we got a chance for the quick democratic transition of our country. And in order to stop us on this way, Russia started this war, occupied Crimea, part of Luhansk and Donetsk regions, and last year extended this war to the large-scale invasion. So we were the first human rights organization who sent mobile groups to Crimea, to Luhansk, to Donetsk regions to document war crimes. And we concentrated on the practice of illegal abduction, torture, sexual violence, and killing civilians in the occupied territories. And I personally interviewed hundreds of people who survived from Russian captivity. They told me horrible stories. They told me how they were beaten, raped, smashed into wooden boxes, and their fingers were cut, their nails were turned away, their nails were drilled. They were smashed, they were compelled to write with their own blood and electrically shocked through their genitalia. So different, very horrible details of torture. And we sent numerous reports to UN, to Council of Europe, to OSCE, to European Union, but nobody paid interest. And I started to lose a sense of my work, because I understood that when I interviewed next survivor, the same horror is going on in more than 143 illegal place of detention, which we identify in the occupied territories. And I can't stop it. So it was a very difficult moment in my life because you want to help people and you can't stop this horror. Existing instruments can't help you. And we change our approach. We start to involve ordinary people into this struggle. And I launched, together with my team, the Save Oleksins of Global Action. We united people in 35 countries of the world. We started with simultaneous demonstration in these countries. And suddenly, because of these simultaneous efforts, when people came to their capitals with the same demands, but not to the abstract Putin, but to the national governments, this problem became visible on the international arena. And we succeed to get results. And we, because of this campaign, dozens and dozens of illegally detained civilians by Russia were released. And in this success, it's a huge impact of collective efforts of thousands and thousands of people around the world who joined this campaign.
This was before 2022 or after?
It was before 2022, because before large-scale invasion, it was a completely different world. You remember that Germany built gas pipeline. A lot of countries, including Switzerland, do business as usual with Russia, regardless of the fact that Russia occupied part of Ukrainian territories. And leaders called to Putin and see no problem to shake the hand of the biggest child kidnapper in the world. And that's why our fear of change was based on the fact that if we mobilize the world to make a pressure to Russia to release these people, because Putin is not interested in these civilians, they will release them. So how that's work. But it was before large-scale invasion. After large-scale invasion, the situation completely changed. Russia don't pretend that they are a civilized country, and they publicly ignore all provisions of international law and decisions of international organizations.
So when you started to do this, when coordinating demonstrations around different countries, then the world started to listen.
Yes, but it not only demonstrations, it was campaign. And this simultaneous demonstration was one element how we start to visualize our campaign. And this campaign was decentralized. All mechanisms which I built, it's decentralized mechanisms, which have no foreign money, how to say it, invested in it, which is based just on goodwill of people not to be indifferent and to do something in order to help. And this Save Oleksins of Global Action is a great example, because all people who do their work in this campaign, I mean, invest their time, their efforts and knowledge, they were volunteers, and they bring not just their human efforts, but also they can express their creativity. They can take responsibility to their own shoulders and create their own initiatives. And this is how it works. And I remember that in different countries, people do different things because they better know how to influence on their national government. What is better to do there? For example, in France, it was an initiative of people who participated in this campaign for releasing political prisoners there. They started a national flash mob, which was called Postcard for Macron. And they involved French media and French intellectual circus in this flash mob. And this flash mob was so powerful that Macron stopped his vacation and called Putin to speak about release of political prisoners, Oleksintsov, and other Ukrainian political prisoners. And this not was our idea. It was responsibility and initiative of people in France who participated in this campaign.
This is a great example about how leadership doesn't mean that you need to tell them what to do, but you need to basically make them see the vision and the purpose and then do whatever they think is possible, which would make it a reality in a way. I think maybe there is a quote, I will try to paraphrase it now, which says something, if you want people to build a ship, don't teach them the skills, but make them strive to go in the wild ocean and have this desire, and then they will figure out how to build the ship. So
I think it's even more important in the story, this power of ideas, which we all shared. Because once again, why I tell before that we have no like money which supported this campaign, and it was a very natural, organic driven campaign, and a lot of other projects which we made and which was successful was built on the same ground, because ideas inspired people. This is a energy of this campaign.
Yeah. And was there a special strategy that helped you to attract these people, or was it just talking about the mission which helped you to attract them?
It depends on the initiative and project. Because when I started this global campaign to release Oleg Sentsov and other Ukrainian political prisoners, I tried to use different methods how to find appropriate people in the country. I know that such people exist in each country. There are groups, there are people, there are communities who are not indifferent. My task was how to get them know that we need their help. And I invest money, efforts in order to do it. For that time, I was in Stanford. I studied in Francis Fukuyama Center for 1 year. I was the participant of Ukraine Emerging Leaders Programs, and I was selected together with two other person to be a part of this program. And this was the end of my program, and I had to prepare some so-called scientific work. But instead of this, I invest my efforts in this campaign to establish connections with different people around the globe, because the push for this campaign was another thing. Oleg Sentsov, a Ukrainian film producer, started a hunger strike with demand, and he demanded to release not just him, but all other Ukrainian political prisoners. And I worked with this topic for years, and I told myself that, okay, I can't continue my study in Stanford while people are struggling with the last methods which they have. So I think that it's we can use different methods how to achieve our goals and how to share the ideas. I just always think that it has to be very naturally, and it has to be in line with the values of people whom you want to involve in this activity.
Right. Alexandra, what gives you energy to keep going? I mean, this requires a lot of energy, and sometimes you meet some dead ends or crisis and you struggle. So what keeps you going? And is there like is it your personal life or is it something else? What gives you that energy?
I am a rational optimist. I work in the human rights field for 20 years in such country as Ukraine. I struggled for freedom during the authoritarian ruler. Now we struggle for freedom in this war with Russia, who tried to destroy us as a country and erode our identity as a people. If I was a pessimist, I will never stay in this field for so long. Mm-hmm. I think this keeps me moving, as well as examples of ordinary people. Like, in the beginning of our conversation, I mentioned Martin Luther King or Mahatma Gandhi, but ordinary people and their examples is also very, very powerful. Because when I see what people do in the small villages and towns in Ukraine, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sincere action. It's so like great sacrifice to humanity. People rescue their lives in order to save others whom they never met before.
Mm-hmm.
They express their best features in these dramatic times of our history. This mm-hmm. is very inspirational.
I don't know why I have this feeling that there is a book inside you that will come out at one point. I think that would be because I'm sure that there are a lot of stories that you've seen, you've heard, and or you read, or you documented, where I think it could make a big difference when it's shared with the world, like in a one full message about, you know, the journey and the progress on the journey. I think it will inspire a lot of people.
I think all of us, I mean, people in different countries, have such stories.
Mm.
And another lessons learned is that in different countries of the world, people also fighting for freedom and human dignity in this moment.
Mm.
And our futures depends on the result of their fights, because we live in a very interconnected world. So we have to help each other.
What my last question is, what would make you happy, or what gives you joy?
It depends on the time, because frankly speaking, once again, I will remind that we are in a war and people are dying every day. And every day we have this feeling that we're struggling with the deaths, because we have numerous deaths in battlefield, numerous deaths in deep rear, numerous deaths in occupied territories. And we don't know either we are in the beginning of the war, in the end of the war, or in the middle of the war. But what we know that this war has a genocidal character. Russia tried to destroy us and to take away our freedom and our human dignity. And we have no other choice. If we stop fighting, they will be no more us. So I think that our main resilience as Ukrainians is not to lose ability to feel joy even during such circumstances. And I still have this ability and feel joy from the very simple things. When you get from your friends a message that they are okay. When you see a sun, when you get up in the morning and say to yourself, okay, but we stand one more night.
Yeah, I mean, actually, at the beginning when you were answering, I thought you were saying that we cannot be happy. But then, I mean, you basically shared that actually we can, and maybe we should. And it reminds me, one of my teachers used to say, like, you know, it will not help, you know, the sad people if you be depressed. You know, it's basically you would help them more if you, you know, pick yourself up and do something. And I really believe in that. So, yeah. Any final advice you could give, like, to the leaders out there, whether leaders in organization or maybe like leaders in society, or like people like you who don't have a title or a authority in the traditional definition. Do you have any advice for such people or leaders?
If I may, because I also read a lot of books, how to be a successful leader or how to build successful institutions, because I want to achieve success in our struggle as well. And in majority of these books and
I wrote one. This is different than the one.
It's completely different, which I want to say. But in majority, the emphasis is on the developing some skills.
Yeah.
How better to achieve their goals. And I think that in our time, we are lack of ethical-driven leadership. We need books about senses, how to take responsibility and how to base your decision not just on economical benefits, but also on ethical norms. This is the art of the future.
Yeah. Alexandra, thank you so much for being with us today. I feel very inspired by what you shared and by your journey and by your example that is making a big difference. Not only for Ukraine, but for the whole world. As you said, the freedom is something we took for granted, but there are examples around us which show us that we should never do so. So thank you for being an inspiration.
Thank you for this opportunity.
And to all the listeners, thank you so much for joining this episode. Like always, stay inspired and make the biggest impact, not only within your area of responsibility, but beyond it.